Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Backstory with Michelle Duffy. Not only am I the proud host of this lovely show, I am a passionate storyteller and executive coach who has had the honor of helping individuals find their way to the best version of themselves for over three decades. I deeply believe in the power of stories to help us see ourselves and see one another. That's what we do in this hour. We let other people's stories, journeys, and backstories inspire us to interrogate more intentionally our own backstory. So thank you again for meeting me here for yet another heart wide open conversation on this beautiful new day that God has given us. I trust that you all are well. Indeed, we have a lot to talk about. But before we get into our conversation, allow me, as I do every week, to to invite you to keep up with KBLA on all platforms at KBLA 1580. I'm also on all platforms at Mishay Inspires. That's M-I-S-C-H-A. Our call-in number is 1-800-920-1580. And to infuse more empowering conversation into your days, you know what I want you to do? Download the app from the App Store on your device of choice. Listen, I opened up today with Beyoncé's You Won't Break My Soul because of where we're going in this hour. Last week, I opened my show by raving about a new stage play I was blessed to see on Friday in Glendale at the Antasius Theater. I told you about how amazing the cast was and the writing was and just the set, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful theatrical experience. The play again is called She. Remember that? Well, today, because God loves himself so much, I am blessed to have in studio the playwright of that amazing project. In addition to being a playwright, she is also an actor. She received her BFA, magna cum laude, from Howard University College of Fine Arts. She is a 2022-23 LA New Play Project grant recipient, a 2022 Lower Depth Commission Fellow, a 2022 AGE Legacy Grant recipient. Listen, I don't even have enough time to tell you all about how amazing this wonderful woman is. But what I will tell you is her name is Marlo Wyatt. And she, again, is the playwright for the play She. And I'm just honored and grateful to have her sitting across from me with this big old beautiful smile. I wish y'all could see Marlo. Welcome to The Backstory.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's my honor. It is. I don't take for granted, as I said to you earlier, when you get the opportunity to see whether it's a movie or a play and you sit and you have so many questions about how it came to be, I don't take for granted that I get to have this conversation, because we get to get behind the veil of what you did, how you did it, and why you did it, right? So I want to start with this. You shared with me that you, from a backstory perspective, that you're from Kansas City.
Yes.
So when we think Kansas City, I think of Dorothy. I think of red shoes. I think of just clicking
you don't
your
think
heels.
Of the Kansas City Chiefs?
I think of them, kind of, sort of. But for the most part, I think of Dorothy. And yeah. I think of dreams coming true, right? And clicking your heels and Glinda the Good Witch and all of that stuff. So in that spirit, talk to us about how you came from Kansas City. Well, let's talk about growing up in Kansas City. Let's talk about leaving Kansas City and coming to L.A.
Oh, let's see. So born and raised in Kansas City, spent 2 years of in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So my family's mostly from Kansas, Oklahoma, that kind of Midwest. And I at Booker T. Washington High School in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I went to Sumner Academy of Arts and Sciences in Kansas City, Kansas. And at Booker T., I was taking an elective, and one of my teachers, Daryl Good, told me, he was like, oh, take an acting class or take a speech and debate, you know, because it's, you kind of go, okay. And I did.
What were you doing that caused him to ask you to take, or suggested you to take that class?
I don't remember, but I think I may have been on the speech and debate team, because I remember us traveling, and I don't know if that was in Kansas or Tulsa, but it was just something, you know, when you have classes and you got to take an elective and you kind of go acting because it's like, it's not going to be hard. It's kind of, you know,
okay.
That's what you
okay.
think.
I thought thought maybe you were dramatic or something in school.
Well, I did well in the competitions in debate. So I don't know if that in speech and debate and things like that. So I don't know. I don't know what made him encourage me to take it.
Okay.
But when I did, he gave me a scene from The Glass Menagerie. And I had never really read plays before. I'd gone, but never really paid any attention. And so that is when he saw me and he goes, "You should act." Mm. It was just kind of like that kind of energy. Mm. And I hadn't decided what I wanted to do yet. Because you're, 16, 17? You really don't know. You know what people push you toward. But it was never the arts. And I was in dance school. You know, like girls go to dance school. And I was a cheerleader, all those things. But it never occurred to me to go to school for acting. And just on a whim, I decided that that's what I wanted to do. I started acting. My uncle lived in D.C. at the time, and he told my mother, he's my mother's twin brother, and he's like, "Send Marlo to Howard, and I'll take care of her." So that's what happened. I just wasn't aware. All of these things, see, the universe, you know, sometimes, what is it, God takes care of idiots and babies or whatever. It's not idiots. Fools and babies, not idiots. But so I think I was in that category at the time because I was just like, okay, you know, I'm going to go to Howard. And when I went to Howard University, coming from Kansas City, in a school that I love, by the way, but it was, you know, there was times growing up in my life that I was the only Black in a lot of things. But I love Kansas City. I love Sumner Academy. I had the best time at Booker T. Washington High School in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I have to shout out to them because Miss Mayo took care of me when my parents moved back to Kansas and they didn't want me to go to different schools for 3 years in a row. So I stayed in Tulsa and graduated. And Zenobia Mayo took me in for my senior year and, you know, counselors and all that kind of stuff. And I ended up going to Howard University. Went to College of Fine Arts, got a talent scholarship, and my dad paid the rest. I was very lucky with that. And the rest is really history. I did not start writing until about 10 years ago, maybe. Went to Howard, did an exchange program at USC, between Howard and USC for a semester. Because I couldn't decide when I graduated. Am I going to go to New York or am I going to go to L.A.? And I went to USC here for a semester and decided when I got back to Howard, when I graduated, I would go to the New York route. So I was in New York for about 7-8 years, and then I moved to L.A. To do film and television. Got teeny little parts, got, you know, national commercial, little things like that. But it never, there was no work like there is now, which I think is so great. It has changed so much in the time that when I first came here. And I started working just at Amazing Grace Conservatory for a little bit, just teaching acting, and I had the opportunity to write their summer program, to put together their summer program, not write it. And so that's when I kind of started writing, because I had kids and I had to write these skits for. And I would work in programs with kids. I worked at City Kids in New York and all these kind of things. So I was used to doing, okay, we got to write a skit about this and morality skits and things like that, but they were still plays. And so that's how it started. And I remember auditioning, going, there's not a lot of stuff out here for me that is culturally authentic. A lot of people were writing, and they would put Black people in it or people of color in it, but it wasn't written for us. And I noticed that. It's like, oh, you play the secretary. And if it was written for us, it was written for us by someone who was not us. So it was a lot of the breakdowns. We're looking for that sassy, you know, how we're described by others. Sassy, this, you know, smart, you know, neck-shaking, neck-jerking Black girl or whatever it may be. And I just wanted to challenge myself. A lot of people kept saying, you should write. Oh, this is so good. This is so good. And I'm like, I just didn't think about it. And I challenged myself. I said, I want to write a play. I'm going to write a full-length play.
Hold that thought right there. Listen, this is Michelle Duffy. She is Marlo Wyatt. When we come forward, we will continue our conversation about her wonderful career and her new stage play, She. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
Stay tuned for more of The Backstory. The Backstory. The Backstory. With Mache Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
King C. Gillette knows you're dedicated to your barbershop routine, but how do you maintain the beard hair you already have? The King C. Gillette Beard Thickener helps to reduce patchiness and strengthens hair's resilience to breakage. Apply the King C. Gillette Beard Thickener daily to see a thicker and fuller beard in just 14 days. Whew. It's highly scented with King C. Gillette's signature scent. Just trim, wash, and soften with King C. Gillette.
Venture X from Capital One is the travel card for people always asking,
where next?
You earn 10x miles on hotels and rental cars, and 5x miles on flights booked through Capital One Travel, and 2x miles on everything else you buy with Venture X. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello?
Man, where are you? I thought you were coming.
I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf. Man, I'll call you back.
Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at getmyflushot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
No young person should ever have to worry about having a safe place to sleep at night or whether anyone cares about them.
But the reality is 1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year.
For over 50 years, Covenant House has been helping youth in crisis and giving them the support and tools they need to succeed in life. To learn more, go to covenanthouse.org today. Thank you for caring.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, the loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
At Susan G. Komen, we believe that ending breast cancer needs all of us working together. Because if you've just been diagnosed and don't know where to turn, we've got you. If you can't afford the treatment you need, we've got you. And if you are driven to honor the loved one you've just lost, we have a place for you here. Because of you, we're supporting those who need help today while tirelessly searching for tomorrow's cures. Visit Komen.org and be a part of our Susan G. Komen community today.
Every story has a backstory.
You're listening to The Backstory. Backstory.
With Mache Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
We're having such a good conversation and time in here. Yes. We're about to get caught off the off air, on air, all of that stuff, having a great conversation. I am Mache Duffy. She is Marlo Wyatt. She's also the wonderful, wonderful writer, of the stage play She. I can't tell you all enough how you need to make your way to, let me get this right, the Antaeus Theater in Glendale to see this production. I intend to go see it again. We're going to break down more of this play for you. But before we do that, there were a couple of things that you said, Marlo, I wanted to go back and talk about. You know, you were talking about high school and someone advising you to take an acting class. And then you go in, your uncle's encouraging you to go to Howard. And as I was listening, you know, all of the pieces and the dots were connecting. And I think sometimes we think stuff is a one-off when in fact it is connected to destiny and to purpose. And I say this, my listeners know I say this quote all the time because I believe it's so true and it's played out powerfully in my life. But Oprah says God can dream a bigger dream for us than we can dream for ourselves. And a lot of times when life is happening to us bigger than we ever imagined, I just believe it's true that it's God's dream for us because we didn't have enough sense, enough forethought to say, I could do that too. So I was listening to you thinking like, wow, you know, God said, I want this for her. And here you are. Mm-hmm. That said, I'm wondering, what did it mean to you? You used this term culturally authentic, right? And you talked mm-hmm. about how things can be written for us, but not by us. And what did it mean to you to have the opportunity to write for us, about us, and to us?
It means the world to me because I grew up in a very, my mother has 7 brothers and sisters. And my mother had me young. So I am very close to my uncles mm-hmm. and my Aunt Judy and mm-hmm. my, you know, and even when I would work and my uncles would call me and my boss would be like, you talk to your uncle? He calls you. Like they would know my family because I grew up close to them. But when you're young, you have a young mother. You know, they take you places. So you're in the car and you're listening to music and you're listening to things that, you know, maybe you shouldn't be listening to, but it seasons your world. Mm. And I've seen so many things as a child and embraced it. I love the way we talk. Mm. We create language. We are the creators of culture, if you really think about it, at least in America,
from the way
we dress, from the way we walk, we are the most copied culture, mm-hmm. in my opinion, mm-hmm. than anybody on this planet. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's Europe or whatever. You know, like I said, the colorful way we dress and how we take negative things that have been thrown at us and turn it into
flip them right
a positive,
on their head.
Whether it's soul food, you know, taking the scraps that the master didn't want and turning, you know, when you think about it, you're eating the intestines of a hog. Mm. I don't like chitlins, but my family loves. They're like, oh, it's so good. And just growing up, I have a very vivid memory of the sounds and the music and the dancing and the love and the pain and having 5 uncles. So I have a different perspective on the complexities of black men because I love my uncles hot mess and all, you know.
Okay,
hot mess and all.
That said, which uncle is what? We ain't gonna name which one. We ain't gonna name which one, but let me say this is let me do a broader stroke. How much of who we see and she the characters are inspired by family?
Okay, this is the truth. Now, A lot came out during rehearsal with the wonderful director, Andy Chapman.
Oh, she's amazing. She was on our show. You all will remember her. She was here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so I would say to Andy, because people say, is this your story? I was like, no, it's not. It's not mm-hmm. It's not my story. I mm-hmm. never wanted to be a writer. I never thought about it. I never. And subconsciously, maybe some of these characters are people that I grew up with, but not intentionally. Mm-hmm. There's nobody. The only things that are similar are the names. Mm-hmm. Otha Lee is my mother's cousin who I grew up with, and I just thought he was the sweetest, kindest when I was a little girl, and I just loved his name. I was like, what a weird name, you know, but I remembered him, and I just remember how nice he was. I loved the way he looked. He's just beautiful. And he was just so cool to me. And so Bernice is my grandmother's name. Mm-hmm. And she died when my mother was 9 years old. So I've never met my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even a thought when she passed away. I think she passed away at 36 years old. So, and then Lee. Lonnie, I mean, is a old boyfriend from Howard. That's, you know, so all of these people, Davy Mansaw is a real name. Mm. And, he is, my, kindergarten crush at Hawthorne Elementary. Mm. I used to love Davy Mansaw so much, and we would fight on the playground. Mm-hmm. You know how kids mm-hmm. do. And I just had a crush on him so much, and so I just used that name. And I would always call him Davy Mansaw. We never called him just Davy, mm-hmm. which is why in the play she always says, Davy Mansaw, Davy mm-hmm. Mansaw, because mm-hmm. you know you have those people and you call them by their full name. You never...
Yeah.
But growing up in Kansas, I mean, the characters existed in some point in my life, I guess, but they're not necessarily family members. But I've seen friends' mothers and, you know, the struggle of being a single mother. If somebody's parent passes or a spouse passes and being young with a child and, you know, what that means and how you have to navigate the balance between finding love for yourself and also taking care of your child.
And, you know, I will say this. And for framing purposes, so I'm not giving too much away. She is about a teenage girl who believes so much in who she is. She believes so much in the power of words. She believes so much in the bigness of life. And there are many extenuating circumstances that try to choke her dreams and try to convince her that she ought to stop and give up, from internally with mom to externally with, you know, and she just holds on to the hope. And there was one time in the play where I felt like it was slipping away from her and I was about to cry. And I'm like, no. But she got it back, you know, and her and her mother toiled and they did this really, really difficult dance that mothers and daughters tend to do when a man comes into play and gets mom's attention. It was just so beautifully, beautifully written. I can't even tell you how beautifully written it was. Can we talk about words? Can we talk about the power of words? Because again, I mean, even what you and Andy did with words just being displayed on the set and yeah, so can we talk about the power of words?
That was all Andy, by the way, because there were surprises. I would go to rehearsal. She's like, I'm doing something, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. I was like, okay. So I come to, you know, one of the previews, and I'm like, oh, my God. I was like,
did it take your breath away like it took hers away?
Yes, and especially because it was a surprise. Okay. I knew about the Langston Hughes. We talked. You know,
that was so amazing.
But what she did for me, I was like, oh, my God. And she laughed. She was like, I told you. Because I was like, don't tell me. Don't tell me. You know, we work well together. I adore her. Mm-hmm. But what was the
power of words.
Oh, yes. This is another thing, and this is all, of course, my opinion. In our community, I think sometimes we take the power of words for granted because so many bad things have been put on us that we have this seemingly tough skin. Mm-hmm. But when you're sensitive to, but we are sensitive to it, we just suppress it because I think, especially with girls, because this is a coming of age American drama. It's a coming of age story about a 13-year-old. And that's such a weird age where you're kind of going through and you're finding yourself. And so when people are constantly chipping away at you and with their you're not enoughness or placing their fears upon you, it takes a lot to combat that. And one of the books that I read, I used to I had a program called The Girl Blue Project. And one of the books that I would teach from every year was the Four Agreements. And the first one is be impeccable with your word.
Yes.
But what he talks about is that words are magic and words can be poison. There's black magic and there's this. And so the things that you say affect people and they affect you. So you have to be impeccable with your word towards yourself and to others because they cast spells. Mm-hmm. And he said it in a way, I was like, you know what they do? Because if you grow up with a mother who's telling you you're constantly this, you believe it. Mm-hmm. You believe what adults tell you.
That's right.
And
especially the ones you trust the most.
Yes. The ones who raise you, the ones who nurture you, the ones whose bloodline you are connected to. Mm-hmm. Why would you not believe them? Why would you not believe them? And so when people grow up a certain way, which is part of what Bernice was, part of the relationship I feel that she and Bernice have, is that we don't know Bernice's story. Mm-hmm. But if you listen, there are certain things that she has been told or been taught to protect her from whatever Bernice's past was.
Right.
And I think mothers do that.
Yeah.
It's just natural to protect your children. And she says, I should have told you, a woman, you were smart. You were this. A woman can't be smart. She can't be things in a world run by.
That's right. That the beauty will go further than the smarts. And that projection can be so imprisoning if you're not a girl who has a mind of her own like she and just is relentless about listening to that whole, the soul of her that says she is your mother, but she's not right. Right.
Yeah.
And we get afraid to say that mom or dad isn't right because they can be wrong. And the other thing I thought about while I was watching and listening was Cicely Tyson's story and reading her memoir. Her mother pretty much forbid her to become an actor and told her she was never going to be nothing if she became an actor, and don't come back here crying when you ain't got nothing. Mm-hmm. And she proved her mother wrong, because inside of her soul, she knew there was a calling on her life to be an actress, and what an amazing actress she was, right? Mm-hmm. And so I saw Cicely Tyson, and she, when we come forward, we're going to talk more about what we saw. And she, this is Mashé Duffy. I am honored and grateful to have in studio with me for this conversation the playwright for She, Miss Marlo Wyatt. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
Disagree without disrespect.
Make your point and keep it pushing.
Let's do this. Listen and learn, or talk and teach. Talking and listening around the clock. Around the clock. Around the clock. KBLA Talk 1580.
I'm Tyreek Wayne. Here's the latest on the Black Information Network. The man suspected of killing 18 people in a Maine shooting spree has been found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Authorities believe Robert Card went on a rampage Wednesday night in the town of Lewiston, shooting dozens of people first at a bowling alley and then at a bar, killing 18, injuring 13. A two-day manhunt for Card ended Friday night when he was found south of Lewiston in the town of Lisbon near a recycling center where he had recently been fined. The TSA is asking travelers to beware of what's in their bags when they pass through the airport security this Halloween weekend. TSA spokesperson Lisa Faberstein says passengers young and old can fly in costume, but they should keep their Halloween makeup to a minimum so security agents can still recognize them at the identification checkpoint. That's the latest. I'm Tyreek Wynn on your home for 24/7 News, the Black Information Network.
Make your next lunch a lunch combo from Buffalo Wild Wings. Choose from wings, street tacos, and more. Head to Buffalo Wild Wings or order online at buffalowildwings.com. At participating locations for a limited time, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Price and participation vary by location. Taxes extra. See menu for details.
Environmental justice, pollution, and climate. In Los Angeles and across America, people of color are suffering and dying from disproportionate health impacts on a planet that has less than 10 years to prevent irreversible damage. Heat illnesses, respiratory illnesses, water-related illnesses, food system impacts, insect-related diseases, Black maternal health, and mental health effects. As the impacts of climate change mount, millions of vulnerable people, our people, are going to bear the brunt of these extreme environmental events, which will likely lead to forced displacement, loss of cultural identity, and other related risks. These realities are as real as rain. Stay tuned to KBLA Talk 1580 for more details about the most progressive multimedia and live events campaign any Black media outlet has ever undertaken to combat the climate catastrophe. Experts, events, empowerment. It's all on the way from unapologetically progressive KBLA Talk 1580. We don't black down. We level up.
Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up.
Attention small landlords who own 12 or fewer residential rental units. The City of LA Emergency Renters Assistance Program is back to help small landlords and is now accepting applications. Apply for up to 6 months of rental arrears for low-income residential tenants behind on rent. Applications will be accepted until October 31st, 2023 at 6 p.m. Go online 24/7 at housing.lacity.org or call 888-379-3150 to see if you qualify and apply today. City of LA Small Landlords, this program is for you.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. your doctor today about SkyRizzy, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit SkyRizzy.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZZY to learn more.
KBLA Talk 1580. We've got a lot to talk about.
KBLA Talk 1580, connecting you with services and solutions. Single Moms Planet is a nonprofit organization dedicated to uplifting under-resourced single mom business owners and working mothers nationwide. Single Moms Planet offers comprehensive programs of financial literacy, business development, mentorship, and entrepreneurial training. They provide education, accountability, and hope. Single Moms Planet was founded by model, TV personality, and producer Nefertiti Plessy. Nefertiti felt firsthand the challenges that face single moms as she was raised by a working single mother. She learned that the most disadvantaged group in the United States are single mom families. According to the U.S. Census, 30% live under the poverty line. So she decided to do something about it, along with co-founder Cole Patterson. Their goal is to end the poverty cycle in single mother households through education, opportunity, and networking, providing family and child enrichment programs for under-resourced single parent families. Single Moms Planet serves over 10,000 single moms and their children each year. Studies show that business development and financial literacy provide a positive environment for children and families, exposing them to new possibilities and opportunities. To attend one of their fun events, make a donation, or get more information, or if you need help as a single mom, please visit singlemomsplanet.org. That's singlemomsplanet.org. This is a community call to action from KBLA Talk 1580.
Thanks for spending some quality time with us and checking out the new weekend talk shows only on KBLA Talk 1580.
Okay. I gotta let Marlo get it together. Thank you for that song. Come on, I needed that.
I wasn't ready for that.
Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna tell y'all what I just told Marlo so you all can be in on what we're laughing about. So we were talking off the air about words. We continued our conversation about the power of words. And Marlo was sharing with me that she journals, and she's been journaling for over 20-something years. And she started when Oprah started the Gratitude Journal. And I've dibbled and dabbled in journaling, but I stopped because I don't want people to find my stuff when I die and know my business. That's how I feel about it. So Marlo can't stop laughing at me. Why are you laughing at me, Marlo?
No, I understand that. But you can, like I said, I have so many.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, I was like, so I got rid of them. I burned them. My friend's like, you burned them? And I was in a car with a friend, they were talking about death and preparing mm-hmm. for this. And they were like, what do you think, Marlo? I was like, let me just say this. I don't care what y'all do when I'm gone. I don't care what you take. I don't care. I just don't, you know, that's just me. So when you said it, because people are going to say whatever they want to say,
yeah.
But I get rid of them, but I have a ton. Meaning if you journal every single day, and I don't just write one page, sometimes it'll be 10.
That was the problem, Marlo. I was writing everything. Girl, when I tell you, I was writing my most intimate thoughts about everything.
But did it help you though?
Oh, no. I completely agree with the power of journaling, what it did for me. But I felt like after I got it out of me, nobody else needed to see it.
And that's when you can throw it away. You
okay.
can burn them. That's
okay.
what I'm saying. You don't you don't have to keep them around.
Yes.
Because the journaling isn't for other people. It's for you.
Absolutely.
And so, because my friend was like, when I was throwing all the, you know, tearing them up, mm-hmm. it's like, I'm going to shred these. And he was like, all of those, how are you doing that? What about your memoir? I was like, I know I'm not going to forget the life that I lived.
Amen.
I did, you know, if I wasn't writing things down to remember. I was writing things down to heal.
Amen.
And so I'm healed
Amen.
From that aspect
Amen.
Of me, because I would read my journals before I throw them away. And I didn't like that girl. So negative, complain about her weight.
Right.
I'm not going to get this audition because she's on television and I don't have, you know.
Yep.
And I was reading it and I go, oh, I do not. Who is this
Who
chick?
Was, exactly.
I was like, she is Debbie Downer, just whine about her life.
Yes.
And I had to laugh because starting the Grateful Journal, all I would ever write is what I'm grateful for. And when you consistently think of the things that you that you have to be grateful for, you have more things to be grateful for.
Speaking of which, thank you for just ushering us into my next question so beautifully. Speaking of things to be grateful for, talk to us about how grateful you are that you stayed with this project. And then I want you to tell me, how did it feel sitting and seeing your words come alive in the cast? Because I can only imagine taking it from your head to paper, from paper to sharing it with people and trusting it to people, to a director who then have to make the real magic happen and getting it ready for those of us who are going to consume it. So can we talk about that level of gratitude?
It's a collaboration for me. As far as me keeping the project going, that was never an issue. This is the thing about life for me. I think everybody has a purpose, whatever, you know, like I said, I never said, oh, I want to be a writer. Never. And I had stories to tell. And one of the things that, and I had a story to tell in She, like I said, started out as, I got to challenge myself. I want to write a play. I know how to deconstruct a play, but I don't know how to build a play. Because as actors, we have to tear things down. And why did she say that? Why, you know?
Right.
And I was like, I want to create a play. I knew that I wanted to be about, you know, they say write what you know. I know what it is to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And it didn't start out being about a young girl, but it just kind of moved that way. And
I think writing tells us what to do. The stories tell us
exactly
what to do. Do you agree with that?
I agree. And if you have a story in you, I had something to say. And a lot of times I didn't realize that until Andy was like, yeah, this is your story. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, Andy, it's really not. And she was like, and then we would be in rehearsal, the table read, and they would ask questions. And I was like, well, when I was little, my blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe it is. You know, but it's not specifically, but
Surely. There
are elements of me in everything mm-hmm. that I write, which is true for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has a purpose. I am grateful. Even I was writing in my journal today, because I know what my purpose is and I have a passion for it. I don't want to do anything else. I'm just not interested.
Amen.
I could do great things. I'm not interested when people say, you know, being doctors. I was like, that's great. I am so not interested mm-hmm. in saving your life in that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you need a lung or whatever, you know, say your prayers if you're coming to me, because you ain't getting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not interested in figuring out how to help you in that way.
Yeah.
But I can tell you a story, or I could heal your soul with my words.
Amen.
In that way. And I think that is the gift that God has given me.
Yes.
And I think the difference is that I understand it. So there was never a doubt. Now, did I know that things were going to, you know, I was going to get these grants and get, you know, produced? That all I could do is submit, do everything that I can and let that go.
How long did it take you to write She?
Oh, I would say I wrote it over a period of 5 years, because I didn't write it straight. You know, mm-hmm. you stop, you put mm-hmm. it away. And I do that often. I didn't read She for a whole year, maybe a year and a half. And one day I was like, let me go read it. And then I said, oh, I like this play. Because a lot of times I won't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll read something. I was like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Just
it's
okay, like, as a commercial.
Yeah, because you read it and it's yours and you connect it and you're like, oh, it's okay. And so I will set it aside, and whether it's 6 months or whatever, and kind of forget about it, because I was reading. I was like, I forgot about that scene. Mm-hmm. I like that scene. So it was that kind of situation for me. And I do that with a lot of my plays.
Mm-hmm.
I do it with all of them. I'm going to say I do it with a lot.
How long did it take you from the time you finally finished it to production? What was that like?
Well, if you're a writer, you know that you never finish, because I rewrote an entire character. The character of Othalie is not the character that people have gone to see readings for.
Mm.
and this is based on the collaboration, and you go, you know what, that's not working, what do you think? And Andy will say this, or I'll get a call during rehearsals from the actor, and they put me on speakers, like, John is, he doesn't feel that blah, 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 and we think that if they really love each other, and I was like, you know what, you're right, I'm going to put that in, we're cut that line, tell the stage manager we're not saying that, she doesn't need to say that. So for me, in this particular play, when I thought it was rewritten, there are three scenes that have been changed.
Wow.
So I can't really say. So, I mean, when people say, how long does it take you to write? Sometimes things aren't finished. And maybe, and even when I went to one of the shows, I was like, I'm not going to change it in this production. But I was like, I don't, she doesn't need to say that. Or this doesn't, it's not important. So I would say, not really. So, I mean, you know, I could say 20 years because, well, not that long. I haven't been writing that long. But however, because just, what, a few weeks ago, some things changed, you know, right before, during rehearsal, you know, just by me coming to rehearsal or sitting down at the table read and going over and discussing each character.
What's your favorite scene?
My favorite scene has always been and still is the Davy Mansell She scene at the end. You know what scene I'm talking about.
I do.
And I actually got an email last night, because I didn't go to the show last night. Okay. And somebody said, that scene with Davy Mansell, and I started laughing. I was like, that's my favorite scene. It has always been, even when I wrote the play, I cried writing that scene.
I cried too many times watching shit. I really, really did cry too many times. I want to talk about the power of love. I want to talk about the beauty of love, because love shows up so many different ways in this play.
Good. That was intentional. I think it's so important for us to see. This is the thing, and I told John this one day. John plays Mr. Lonnie, and I grabbed him, and I whispered in his ear, and I was like, I love me some us. I said, I love Black men, and I want to honor them without creating a false sense. You know, I don't want to go left. I like the truth of them, and I want to honor that. And I think that... he does such a perfect job with Mr. Lonnie, because I like the imperfections. I like the
hold that thought. When we come forward, we are going to unpack the imperfections of Mr. Lonnie, because Mr. Lonnie got on all of my nerves.
No,
I was so sick of him. I was just like, do one more thing. Just one more thing, Mr. Lonnie. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
The station you turn to when you've had it up to here with cultural incompetence. KBLA Talk 1580.
Is your eyesight changing?
I can't read this anymore.
Don't lose hope. People just like you are working every day using Braille, screen magnification, speech technology, and other tools and blindness skills. Your eyesight may have changed, but your goals, they don't have to. We can help. Visit us on the web at blind.org. The National Federation of the Blind. Live the life you want.
At City National, we listen to you.
I want to expand my business and my legacy.
I want to set up the next generation for success.
I want to see my vision come to life.
I want to feel right at home.
Your goals, passions, vision, future. We want to hear it and work alongside you to achieve it. Visit cmb.com to learn more. City National Bank, here for our clients and communities.
KBLA Talk 1580.
We've got a lot to talk about.
KBLA Talk 1580 reminding you that we keep us safe. Pro Football Hall of Famer and urban peace pioneer Jim Brown believed in just that. So he founded the AmeriICAN Foundation for Social Change in 1988, focusing on at-risk and high-risk youth in underserved schools and juvenile detention facilities, as well as adult incarceration and reentry initiatives. The core of the AmeriICAN program is its 15-chapter life skills curriculum. Mastery of these skills allows individuals to meet their academic potential, conform their behavior to acceptable society societal standards and improve the quality of their lives by equipping them with what they need to confidently and successfully contribute to society. Today, the foundation is led by its president, Monique Brown, who has been actively involved in the organization for more than 25 years. The Amera ICAN Foundation continues its work in memory of its founder, actor, philanthropist, and NFL legend, Jim Brown. To get involved or make a donation, please visit AmericaICanCommunity.partners. That's AmericaICanCommunity.partners. This is a community call to action from KBLA Talk 1580.
King's Feature Let knows you're dedicated to your barbershop routine, but how do you maintain the beard hair you already have? The King's Feature Let Beard Thickener helps to reduce patchiness and strengthens hair's resilience to breakage. Apply the King's Feature Let Beard Thickener daily to see a thicker and fuller beard in just 14 days. Whew. It's highly scented with King's Feature Let's signature scent. Just trim, wash, and soften. With King C. Gillette.
Venture X from Capital One is the travel card for people always asking,
where next?
You earn 10x miles on hotels and rental cars, and 5x miles on flights booked through Capital One Travel, and 2x miles on everything else you buy with Venture X. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for
details. As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Every story has a backstory.
You're listening to The Backstory. Backstory.
With Michelle Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
This is Michelle Duffy. I am in studio. She said, we need more hours. We don't even have one. We only got 8 little minutes.
I know.
And this conversation has been all the delight. It's been everything I thought it was going to be. Again, I am Michelle Duffy, and my guest in studio is Miss Marlo Wyatt. She is the creative mind behind the play She that's now playing in Glendale. And I hope you all have enjoyed our conversation. We've been talking about love. We've been talking about writing. We've been talking about just her career and how she's gotten to where she is and the magic of words. And I want to go back and talk about Mr. Lonnie. We left off before the break talking about Mr. Lonnie, who is, as Marlo just shared and described him, she says he's a man who can't seem to live up to the man he wants to be for Bernice, who is the woman he loves. And when I tell y'all I was sick of Mr. Lonnie in this play, I was sick. If you don't go for nothing else but to see Mr. Lonnie and get on your last nerve, listen, go to the play. But here was the thing that I took from what you were just saying. I don't think as women we realize, and this can go both ways, but we're talking about Mr. Lonnie, so I'm going to speak from a woman's perspective. I don't think that as women, we always get, Marlo, that men are actually struggling with becoming the man he wants to be. Y'all should see her up here with her hands in the air. Be for us. We think that men are being jerks. We think they're being rejecting us. We think they don't love us as much. But not until your description of Lonnie am I starting to look at that a little differently. Please unpack that for me.
Because, like I said, I grew up with five uncles. Yes. And I got to watch them both sides. I watched how they treated their spouses. I watched. And I saw them.
Yes.
I saw them because I see the way a man, I've seen men cheat on their wives and take care of their children, be the best fathers in the world. And I think we live in this world where it's like we make people be one or the other. And sometimes they're both. Sometimes they're not the best husband, but they are the best father that you can ever be.
Jake
and
said
so
that. Yeah.
we tend to, with all that's been done to us historically, it's interesting because there's parts of us too where we protect them when they shouldn't be protected, or we cover up for them, or we take up for them
or
and not make
them,
we enable them and not make them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that does to a man's spirit, but I don't think pity is. And I'll say this. I was at Zam Zam's, actually, across the street, because I go there all the time. And I get my shea butter. Mm-hmm. And there was a gentleman in there, a young brother. And I was in another aisle, but I heard him talking to the owner, and he was trying to figure out how he could buy this oil because he wanted to sell the oil. And the guy was helping him, which was so nice. He was like, no, buy this size, pay this much, and then get the jars. You sell it for five this and this. And he's sitting there talking, and I saw him looking at his cell phone, and I just kind of saw him out the eye. And he said, but I only have $35. And I knew that he didn't have enough to try to go do whatever he was going to do. But they were both trying to figure it out, and he was just looking. And so I said to him, I said, excuse me. I said, I don't want to be disrespectful, but do you mind if I buy this for you? Mm. And he looked at me and he said, and I was so happy he said it. He was like, thank you so much. He said, that would help me out so much. Mm. But I knew, because my friends, when we left, and so I got it for him. And I was happy to do it because I knew the hustle. I saw it in his eyes. Mm. And I knew, I'm about to cry thinking about it, but he was trying to do his thing. He wasn't like, I'm going to steal, I'm going to do whatever. You know, he was like, I'm doing the best with what I have. Yes. And when we got in the car, with my friend had driven me, and she was like, my friend from Baltimore, she was like, I'm curious, why did you buy that from him? I said, because I just saw, I was like, he was young, he was, you know, and I'm rooting for him. Amen. And I know the world is not rooting for him. Mm. And he was trying to figure it out. And I know what it's like to have 37 cents in the, I know what it's like to have to only, I can only afford to eat a slice of pizza a day when I was in New York, and I couldn't take the subway. So I had to walk from 18th Street in the Village to Harlem, you know?
Yeah.
I said, I know what it's like. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about him is that he wasn't asking for it. He didn't ask for anything. He wasn't asking for a handout. He wasn't expecting anybody to give him anything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have it at the time. Yeah. And it ends up that my friend bought my stuff, which I didn't know he was going to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was just like, and then they bought me dinner afterwards, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
I hadn't planned on that. We all went out to dinner. He's like, I'm taking care of it. So I was like, it all,
that's right.
We have to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And we come from that naturally, culturally. I spent some time in Ghana. I spent a summer there. And I was like, somebody's like, how was it? I was like, it's just like, I was like, I felt like I was at my cousin's house, but they're broke. They don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. But we had the best time. But the thing I learned about people in, I spent time in Accra and Takoradi, which is 4 hours outside of Accra, is that nobody begs. Whatever they have, if they have a scarf, they will take the scarf and say, I'd like to sell you this scarf. Because I was like, nobody's asking me for money. Nobody. The whole time I was there, and my friend who lived there, he was like, we don't do that.
Mm.
Like, you know, our life is our own, but they take care of each other.
Yeah.
So if somebody doesn't have something to eat, they're going to make sure that that person has something to eat. And
wow.
That has been stripped from us. I think culturally we used to do that. And then capitalism and all that stuff, where it's like each man for his own, survival of the fittest, and, you know, I got to get my coin, so eat doggy. And it's like, but it doesn't work.
I think you're absolutely right. And the last minute I have with
you. Sorry.
No, you didn't do anything wrong.
We're getting off the rails.
No, we're not. This is beautiful, because at the end of the day, you are so right. We have got to learn how to take better care of each other.
And
we,
that's what happens in sheep.
And that's what I was about to ask you. In your in a minute, can you tell us what you want people to take away from She?
Oh, I want people to be inspired. I want people to feel empowered. I want people to be entertained.
Yeah.
Because you go to the theater to be entertained. I want there to be release. I want Black people in particular to see themselves, but I want everybody. This is a play for everybody. It's an American play that just happens to have a Black protagonist.
Amen.
It is a very much an American play, and anybody who has a dream that is unfulfilled, that they set aside, this is the play to inspire you to continue that.
Indeed. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Listen, it has been a joy to have you with me today. Thank you so much for your time. Again, she is Marlo Wyatt. You can follow her on Instagram at Marlo Writes. You could also visit her on her website at MarloWyatt.com. And that Marlo is M-A-R-L-O-W and Wyatt is W-Y-A-T-T.com. Thank you all for hanging out with me today. I appreciate you. I love you. Up next is Cafe Mocha with Yo-Yo Lonnie Love and Angelique Perrin. Of all the ways you could have spent the last hour, I'm grateful you chose to spend it with me on the unapologetically progressive, most trusted KBLA Talk 1580. Again, until next week, stay grateful, stay safe, and stay inspired. Love you much.